Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, it's time to react to that game. Ohio State 20, Penn State 12. Probably as disappointing an offensive performance as I think I've seen since 6-4. I have not recovered yet. Have you?
Well, I'm trying to put it in perspective, and I'm reading through comments, including a lot of my good buddies, and it is difficult. And in the moment, there's all kinds of lashing out at all kinds of individuals and the overall scheme. And I get it. I truly am baffled by the seeming lack of any creativity within that offense, given, again, what I thought was basically a month to get ready for this one game. And to go 1-for-16 on third down conversions is absolutely astounding to me. And listen, I do think Ohio State's defense, we knew it was good. I think it's better than I even thought it was, and I thought it was pretty good going in. So I do think Ohio State deserves some of the credit here. But how you, again, basically get ready over the course of a month, which is in my mind what Penn State should have been doing, the coaching staff at least should have been doing, and that is what you came up with offensively, is just beyond disappointing. That being said, again, I'm trying to take big picture stuff, and a couple of things. One is, we can definitively say at the moment, and again, this could change in 3 weeks, at the moment, Penn State definitively has not entered the realm of the elite in college football. That being said, that realm is held by 4-6 programs. And I think Penn State is definitively in that next tier, the very good, if you will. I get that's not where you want to be. It's not where James Franklin wants to be. It's not his stated goal. The fans want to be winning national titles. But the number of folks that I am reading that, well, you got to get rid of James Franklin. I just, again, there are so many cautionary tales out there. But you go to Bo Pelini in Nebraska, to me, most notably, and I just think you got to be careful. You have it pretty good here. Not as good as you want it. I get it. And I'm with you. I want Penn State to be one of those top four programs in the country. I want it to be an annual thing. I feel like everything is in place here for that to happen at Penn State. And they're not there yet. But I am telling you, there are a lot of programs, the overwhelming majority of programs in the country, that would love to be in the position that Penn State is. And listen, first of all, James Franklin isn't going anywhere. So there's, you can gripe all you want and want it all you want. It's not happening, number one. But number two, even if it did, if you could play the hypothetical out, I think it is more likely than not that the next decade looks very ugly for Penn State football. I think it is more likely than not that the successor, whomever you would bring in next year, does not have the success that James Franklin has had to this point in his Penn State career. And I think with the transfer portal and everything else, again, these are James Franklin guys. You cannot like what James Franklin is doing. You cannot like what Mike Yurcich is doing. All well and good. I am telling you, you are basically going to be starting over, and it'll be another 3 or 4 years till Penn State gets back into the mix if you make the right hire. So I just, again, I understand the frustration. I share the frustration. I think it is okay to step back, though, and look at the other programs that consider themselves elite. And they consider themselves elite because there's been historic pedigree where they're consistently in the mix over decades for national titles. I mean, Penn State really, Jim, The 1980s was the decade for Penn State football. Outside of that, Penn State has had a season here, a season there, where they're up there with the giants of college football. But schools like USC, like Notre Dame, like Texas, like Texas A&M, these are programs that consider themselves to be in that. None of them are doing consistently what James Franklin and Penn State have been doing over the last decade. So, again, I understand the frustration. I am perplexed by the offense and the lack of productivity, but I'm trying to keep big picture perspective. And I do think big picture, we'll see how this season plays out, but I think Penn State is actually in good shape, not in the as great a shape as I think we thought they were going into that Ohio State game, but still a pretty good deal at the end of the day.
Jeff, as we know, fan is short for fanatic, and it was a fanatic type response to this. And let's set aside that group that they want to get rid of Franklin, they want to get rid of Yurcich, they want to bring Sean Clifford back to replace Drew Aller. None of those things are going to happen. We know that.
Yeah.
And the fact is, and to your point about James Franklin and what he has done here, what he's built here, I don't think there's another coach necessarily who could have done it. Certainly no one that's available. So staying away from that replace the coach thing, the fact is, I think James Franklin has recruited so well. He's brought in good assistant coaches. He and his staff have put together a team that no doubt in my mind, no doubt they could have taken Ohio State and beaten them. Okay, they had the talent to do it. I actually say I think Penn State has more talent than Ohio State. So I think the difference when James Franklin is one and forever against Ohio State, I don't have the issue with that that a lot of people do because – you know, I'm sure Rutgers and Indiana and Wisconsin and name any other Big Ten team, and until the last 2 years, Michigan also had that issue with Ohio State. But this is the first time, Jeff, talent for talent, they were as good or better. So my criticism is going to be not replace James Franklin, but James Franklin, what the heck did you do for this game? You had, as you said, Jeff, almost a month to prepare for it. And that's what you give us?
Yeah, and it just seemed like such a disjointed game plan. And listen, I think sometimes we don't appreciate all that goes into it. And, you know, there were several things that certainly contributed to the loss and to the offensive woes. And yes, I do think the game planning is part of it because I didn't think – you know, that you had those two big Nick Singleton runs back to back, and then it's like they just got away from even thinking about the running game once they fell behind that second time. And again, James Franklin said in his postgame press conference, it was a one possession game, and it felt like there were some openings that they were creating with the run game. You know, I know it's a tired, and I even roll my eyes when fans are like, oh, you got to throw to the tight end more. But honest to God, Jim, you have two of the best tight ends in the country, and you're looking to get a little rhythm with your offense. Why they weren't a bigger, more integral part of trying to get the offense kickstarted is beyond my comprehension. I just don't understand why that wasn't involved. The other thing is Trey Wallace only got targeted. Well, I didn't see the final statistics, but it couldn't have been more than four times, four or five. And again, when they targeted him early, he made a couple of good catches. It just seemed like the things that had been consistent throughout the season, they got away from for some reason. And it's very perplexing to me. I genuinely don't understand what the game plan was. Now, that being said, again, there was plenty of execution problems. Jim, one of the most, and you know, I feel horribly for Drew Aller. He obviously took the loss very personally. He had a disastrous game. There's no question about that. But the thing that was just bizarre to me watching it was the lack of fundamentals. And we just haven't seen that with Drew Aller. He kept throwing off of his back foot, and not with great pressure there. But even if you have great pressure, right? Like, I mean, you're learning in junior high school as a quarterback, you don't throw off your back foot. And he was doing it consistently. And now I got to go back and review. I don't remember seeing that. certainly not with any regularity throughout the course of the season. He wasn't following through on his throws in the fourth quarter. He had open receivers. I know the lack of separation is an issue, and I'm all on board. That needs to improve. But he had short passes to open receivers. Now, again, I think we're talking about plays that were going to go for 3 to 5 yards, not game-breaking plays. I get it. But he has delivered those balls pretty consistently throughout the season. And not only was he inaccurate, but the fundamentals were awful. It just was, it was bizarre. I don't know what other word to use. I don't know what happened there. That I don't know if he just got rattled on the road. And I do want to get into some of the statistics, because it is amazing the difference in this offense, and in particular Drew Aller at Beaver Stadium versus away from Beaver Stadium. And we knew it to some extent going into the Ohio State game, but again, it was a 2-game sample size. But now we have 3 games, and Jim, it is just, it's like he looks like a guy that could be an All-American candidate quarterback at Beaver Stadium, and he looks like a guy that just has no business being a Division I athlete when he's on the road. And it's just, again, to me, it is very, very perplexing. I get it's a big atmosphere. I get it was a big game. All of the things that come into play there. But he just did not look anything like the quarterback we've seen at Beaver Stadium this season.
I'm in total agreement. And it felt like, to me, those fundamentals went away when he was rushing everything. I don't want to use the word rattled, but it's now a trend on the road where he looked like, you know, when Penn State's defense gets to a quarterback, you could see there's that point where that quarterback's, he's rattled, he's shook, he's not going to be the same. That's how Drew Aller looked from the start, and it's something he's going to have to get past. Jeff, that's it for quarter one. We'll have plenty of time to dig into those stats in quarter two. Stay with us.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We're talking all things Ohio State 20, Penn State 12. And Jeff, we want to get into the stats. We talked about that. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about the play calling. And oftentimes, you could look and say, wait a minute, how come they threw the ball this many times instead of they ran it? Or how come they ran it so many times versus this? Some of my wrath is with the timing of it. I always, to the point where I'm sure our listeners are tired of hearing it, throw the ball on first down. That's the easiest down to pass the ball. So I thought, even I start this game with the safest pass in the world for Drew Aller. I want him 1 for 1 and maybe pick up 5 or 6 yards, and I'm pleased. They chose to run the ball on first down. It's now 2nd and 4. Okay, they got some push, some movement. I've got 4 yards to go, 2 downs to do it. I'm now going to run the ball a couple times, get me my first down. Now I could take a breath. Now I got a fresh set of downs. Maybe I play action pass on first down after running the ball three times. But instead, second and four, they threw the ball, put themselves in, you know, third and four position. Now they have to throw the ball. And I could pick out so many of these. A third and one, you throw the ball, and it's not like, oh, we saw something so we can beat you downfield and there's a touchdown at the end of this gamble. It's we're throwing the ball 6 yards down the field. The payoff, I don't think, was worth the risk. Run the ball. Get the first down. And it's not even a case where, oh, well, we know we'll go for it on fourth down because they then lined up to go for it, called timeout, thought better of it, and punted. It's time after time. The last one I'll bring up is you brought up Singleton with the back-to-back good runs. We follow that up with a sack and then an incompletion. You had third down then on this and 13 and said, we're giving up. We're playing for a field goal. We hand the ball off on third and long. Yep. And I can give you those over and over again till even late in the game where it's that run, run, pass, punt setup. Very disappointing, Jeff.
Yeah, the situational, I'm with you 100%. It's not that they didn't run enough or didn't pass enough. It was the situational awareness or lack thereof, it felt like, by Mike Yurcich and the offensive play calling. It just was perplexing. And I really thought they'd have a lot more misdirection plays. I thought we would see again. I said and listen, I'm getting a lot of people that you were right. They should have put Pribula in. Listen, I would have loved to have seen it. I still think it would have been a great move if they had worked on it and had something specific. Yeah, again, it's one of those games. I understand that they actually practice hard and do everything they can to prepare for the game. It felt, as a fan, like there was just a complete lack of game planning. So I know at least a lot of my buddies are like, you know, you were right. They should have put Pribula in. Pribula would have given Ohio State fits. Listen, I don't have great confidence that that offense would have been running up and down the field with Pribula. I understand the frustration in the moment. And again, we'll never know for sure, but I just don't think without the threat of the passing game being consistent, that it would have made that much of a difference overall in the game if Pribula was in there. Again, I would have liked to have seen it, and I really thought they probably had something up their sleeve. I thought if nothing else, we might just see him in there and like a little shovel pass to him or even just a pitch where you give him an option. I thought we would see a lot more imagination. I thought we'd see receivers, again, coming across and, again, maybe a little shovel pass or just some sort of misdirection, even just a fake reverse type thing where you just get Ohio State maybe being a little over aggressive and try to use that against them. It just, I don't know. I'm genuinely perplexed at the Penn State offense and what felt to me like a complete lack of creativity given the significance of this game and what I think is still a talented group. Now, that being said, Penn State does not have, obviously, a Marvin Harrison Jr. On the roster. I did say during the week, I thought Marvin Harrison was going to be the best player on the field in this game because I think he's the best player in college football. That obviously turned out to be the case, and he was a difference maker. But I think Penn State has a lot more to offer in its passing game. And again, I don't think it's all on Drew Aller. I know the kid is taking it all on himself. I think the offensive line had some problems. The receivers certainly had issues with creating opportunities downfield. But I also do think this coaching staff does share a good bit of the blame. It was just a very lackluster game plan. And there were just so many times where you're scratching your head trying to figure out what in the world they were thinking was why a particular play would have been successful. And you know, you just go from here. I do want to, you know, Drew Aller, and again, I'm not pinning this loss on Aller. I don't think anybody other than Aller himself is. Although it is bizarre, again, to me, Jim, to watch the way he played that game with the skill set and the pedigree that he has. But we're now 3 games into the road schedule. On the road, he is 52 of 108 for 588 yards and 2 touchdowns in 3 games. That's a 48% completion rate. He's averaging 196 yards a game on the road and less than a touchdown pass per game. In the home games, okay, he is 84 of 115 for 857 yards. That's a 73% completion rate, averaging 285 yards a game and averaging nearly 3 touchdowns a game. And you say, well, Ironhead, okay, that, but my God, he, you know, padded those stats with Delaware and UMass. Okay, let's take Delaware and UMass out of the equation. West Virginia is at least a bona fide Power 5 program, and Iowa, I think, has a pretty good defense. In those 2 games at Beaver Stadium, 70% completion rate, 46 of 66 for 491 yards, an average of 245, and 3.5 touchdowns a game in those 2 with West Virginia and Iowa. Now, again, I get it's a first-year starter, on the road can be challenging, but I mean, these are crazy variations in the numbers where, again, at home, those numbers are pretty darn impressive, up there with some of the best in the country. And again, on the road, I mean, you would rank him in the bottom probably 4 or 5 of Big Ten quarterbacks. And that is just, I don't know how you exactly explain that. Because again, I think Iowa and Ohio State's defenses are comparable. It's not like this is, he's just playing great defenses on the road and at home. No, that's not the case. West Virginia has not a great defense, but I mean, again, a Power 5 program. Iowa does have a great defense, and Northwestern certainly doesn't have a great defense. And Illinois, while it has a good defensive line, I mean, that's not one of the all-time defenses in the country here. I mean, obviously, they got to figure it out, but it is just really, really weird to me that it's that different. I can understand the road numbers being a little less, but man, this is crazy, the difference.
Those numbers are really damning on, you know, with what they did on the road. Jeff, I'm going to lay it at the feet of Mike Yurcich, because it didn't appear they were doing anything to make Drew Aller's job easier. And once things start to go downhill and unravel, it's hard to get them back. My point being, I will often question, gee, why did, you know, 3rd and 10, why are you running the ball? Well, Jim, you don't understand. The defense that was being played asked for it. Well, then how come there was no success? Okay. If you're telling me the defensive formation said this is the right thing to call, that's number one. Number two, the creativity, as I always said, you know, it's easiest to pass on first down. It's late in the game. You're doing that run, even when it's everything's going to be 4 downs, you did the run, pass, okay, as opposed to run, pass, punt. You did nothing to make it easier for Drew Aller. And when you go into your bag of tricks, all you have is the double pass to Lambert Smith, which, by the way, you've already done a couple times previously. It's not like Ohio State hasn't seen this before. So it just boggles my mind. And the final thing that I'd like you to comment on, Jeff, they were 0 for 15 on 3rd down till that last drive when, you know, Ohio State was playing rather soft. You can't fathom going 0 for 15. By accident, you've got to get at least 1 first down, don't you?
I mean, and that's the thing, Jim. Yes, when you have a quarterback that's as heralded as Drew Aller, a receiving core that's as experienced as Penn State's is, you have 2 tight ends who I will still argue are among the best tandem in the country, and you have a couple of running backs that are among the best tandem in the country. With all of that in particular, Jim, yes, it's truly incomprehensible that this team would not have been picking up several first downs, let alone a first down on a third down play through the first three, plus quarters. Again, the lack of imagination and creativity, for all we talk about the imagination and creativity on defense, the lack of it, and again, I've been attributing it to, they're just ready. They're waiting. Wait till you see what they do against Ohio State and Michigan. It's the same offense that we've been seeing, except obviously much less effective against Ohio State. One other just quick note, Jim, though. Penn State, again, James Franklin is getting a lot of flack, and I'm with you. He's 1-9 against the Buckeyes. Ohio State has only lost 6 times in conference since James Franklin has been coach. And Michigan, which won the last 2 games against them, is the only team that has more than 1 win against the Buckeyes in the conference since 2014. So this is not exactly a damning condemnation of James Franklin's coaching.
Very good, Jeff. We're going to have Landon Tengwall on, so we'll get a player's perspective next. Stay tuned for that.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Landon Tengwall. Landon, what a tough game on Saturday. Penn State goes down to Ohio State 20-12. My first question to you, first request from you, is could you bring some sanity to this fan base that right now is just beside itself?
Yeah, I understand that. I completely understand that as a fan base. One of the biggest games of the year. You obviously want to take that one home. And it's hard, as the players, it's one of the games we want the most. But I would say, obviously, don't panic. I know that's what everybody's trying to say. Keep calm, don't panic. We have, second half of the season incoming. I really do believe that, and that's what the players are coming in this morning believing, and that's what the coaches are preaching to the players, watching this film. They're watching the film. They're breaking it down, trying to clean up these mistakes, but it's really just trying to put this behind us once we watch that film and correct those mistakes and move on to Indiana. If you just sit there and kind of dwell on this game, it's not going to do much for you. It really just can only affect you negatively. Obviously the fans are, it's going to be talked about for the next even couple weeks. But hopefully we can put this one behind us and get back on track, get that offense back on track this coming week against Indiana.
Let's talk about that offense a bit. And in discussing this with different fans, watching message boards, a lot of talk about the play calling, and I'd like to get into that a little bit with you. First of all, just in general, did you see anything with the play calling that struck you as odd or different, or you looked at and said, you know what, I'm wondering why they're going that way instead of this way?
Well, yeah, we talked about that 3rd-and-1 where we decided to pass it, down on Ohio State's side of the field. That one was some people had some questions about that, because generally when it's 3rd-and-1, if you do decide to take, pass it there, which we had something, the cornerbacks got tripped up, and if we could have hit Dre in stride, he could have taken it to the house. But that's why you kind of take that risk there on 3rd-and-1 to pass it if you're going to turn around and run it on 4th-down, whether, it's 4th-and-1. So whether that be a QB sneak or something up the middle. I know a lot of the fans were upset not seeing, you know, the big boy formation in the backfield with Nick Catron, you know, a tight end, definitely something we could have saw there. So definitely was, you know, questioning a little bit what was the thought process behind, you know, throwing it there. It was there. We just had, you know, you just got to make that pass. I think it might have gotten tipped a little bit. But I know there was, you know, there was other times throughout the game that some fans had some questions about, you know, running it here, passing it there. And I'd say, you know, it's one, first off, it's hard on when you're 1-for-16 on third down. And, you know, we talked about last week, you know, getting on schedule. If you're not able to convert third downs, it's hard. Those are drive killers. You know, it's hard. That's, you know, that's why you're punting a lot. You know, another reason why it was, you know, I think it was lacking so bad is, you know, we talked about earlier as well, Catron and Nick only combining for 18 rushes. That's someone, those are two guys you're expecting to go into Ohio State and kind of lean on that run game, especially with a young quarterback, you know, essentially a freshman in Drew Allar, playing in the, you know, the hardest game of his life. You got to be able to lean on those tight ends, on those run games, lean on your offensive line. So definitely a lot to clean up today on this Sunday for Penn State, especially on the offensive side. But I think we got a lot of talented guys, so we have the ability to bounce back. We just need to, you know, start drawing up the right plays in the right situations.
You mentioned about Nick Singleton and Catron Allen not getting that many carries, and especially there was that series where back-to-back, Nick Singleton had one good rush after another. I think it was like 20 yards and 15 yards. And I know it's easy in hindsight to say, oh, why did you then pass the ball on the next play? But it's also just, did they get away from it too quickly? It seemed like, hey, there were some openings. There were some holes, at least on those couple plays. Why go away from that?
Yeah, before the end of the game, it was never really more than a one-possession game. So I you know, as an offensive lineman, I do think we abandoned it a little too quickly. You know, you want to keep instilling that confidence in your guys. And when you're running the ball on a team and you start to get those 15, 20-yard gashes that Nick was able to get a couple times, you know, that instills a lot of confidence into your offense. And then it also opens up play action. It also opens up the deep passes, which, you know, obviously everybody's talking about. We need to get into a little bit more, especially, you know, you look at the tight ends between Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren. You know, we got 3 receptions, not too many targets. You know, the one time Theo did get targeted, it was a great, beautiful play action pass, hit him, you know, on a crosser over the middle. You worked beautifully, but that was a little bit earlier on when the run game was, you know, getting that suck from those linebackers, meaning it was pulling them down so those tight ends could get over the top. When you aren't threatening the defense that much with the run game, those LBs, and Ohio State has a great, great linebacker room with Eichenberg, very impressive. And they just weren't getting those pull on those linebackers. So stuff really wasn't coming open across the middle. So it really, when you kind of look at it, it always goes back to run game. If you can establish that run game and make that defense fear your run game, it can do a lot for your offense and open up a whole lot. But when we started to kind of get away from that, and like I said, and you know, we're dropping back almost 45 times, that puts a lot of stress on the quarterback, wide receivers, and especially the offensive line facing a defensive line like Ohio State has.
Well, let's talk about that. And the passing game obviously was not effective. And I don't think there's any doubt this was not Drew's best game. It was probably his worst game. Tell me a little bit about going on the road in an environment like Ohio State. Now, he had a couple other road starts already, Illinois, Northwestern, which, by the way, he was not at the top of his game then also. So what happens when you get on the road and you are now playing a good defense like Ohio State? How can that affect a young quarterback?
Yeah, well, obviously it's much more of a hostile environment for especially for a young guy who hasn't, you know, had a ton of that experience. You know, one thing I will tell you about Drew is that he's a natural baller. I've seen it since he came in against Purdue on the road week one, you know, as a true freshman, and made some really impressive throws right away. You know, that's one thing I don't think Penn State fans have to worry about is how he's going to bounce back. You know, I just know his work ethic and who he is. He's going to bounce back. Now, obviously, like you said, being young and being on those road games, it's not easy. A little extra nerves, you know, the fans booing you. It's a little extra loud. You have to worry about communicating a little bit more than you do at home, you know, because obviously the crowd makes it a little more silent for you, a little bit easier to communicate with the offensive line and the wide receivers. And I'd say also really so far, everything has just kind of been on schedule for the most part. Now, obviously, we've had some games, Illinois, where it was a little bit slower. But, you know, we're able to put Drew in these positions, you know, where he can really just kind of manage the game, lean on the run game a little bit. This is the first time that we saw that we had to fully rely, you know, on our passing attack. And that, like I said, it's not easy for a young quarterback away against a top five team in the country. It's a tough task for anybody. And, you know, obviously we need to see wide receivers get a little bit more separation, get a little more open down the field, you know, 10, 15 plus yards down the field. That's really important. Like you said, we got to be able to start to stretch the defense and threaten them a little bit and just be able to lean on that run game. Like I said, it's so important and vital for offense to get going, especially with a young quarterback and on the road. So, you know, you'd like to think going into a game like Ohio State, the mindset is we're going to establish this run to make it a little more comfortable for our quarterback, give him those easy play action, you know, throws right over the top to one of, you know, our great tight ends. That type of deal is really important to get a quarterback's confidence going on the road as well.
Let's talk about those third downs. Now, this in a game with a lot of ugly statistics, perhaps starting 0-for-15 on third down and finally getting on the last third down completion and a first down. So they were for the game 1-for-16. Is there anything that you saw, a common thread that was going on? And the second part to that question is, this is a team that should have been building to this game with a bye and UMass. And I understand there was essentially 3 weeks to prepare. And as fans, we say, in preparation for Ohio State, did you not have some plays in your pocket that you said, you know what, this is going to work against Ohio State and bring them out come third down? So when you start 0-for-15, you know, did you see anything that you'd say, here's a common thread?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say a lot of the third downs were a little bit longer than we'd like. Generally you like those third and shorts where you can run the ball. And also, I mean, Ohio State's defense it's one of the best defenses, you know, in college football. It's right up there with our defense. Super impressive. And that was one of the hardest things. You saw that when the defensive line is able to kind of tee off and know it's a pass, bring those stunts, bring those blitzes. And, you know, Ohio State is super exotic, and they have some really fantastic players on defense there to rush the passer. It starts to get really hard. And if the wide receivers aren't getting a lot of separation, when you've got someone in your face and you're trying to make a throw on someone who is essentially fully covered, It's not easy at all on those third downs. And, you know, obviously you have plays that you come into the game with that you think, you know, all right, if we need something on third down, this is our go-to play. And you know, sometimes it's just not there. As the coaches say, sometimes the other guys on scholarship too, they're going to make some plays. And unfortunately, Ohio State just made a lot more of those plays than us yesterday. And you know, it's hard on a defense too, on our defense. You know, you can only hold them off for so long, but shout out to those guys. I mean, they did a fantastic job, you know, kind of keeping that in check all day. But it's just, you know, it's difficult when you get off schedule, when you start to kind of get into, okay, now we're 0-for-8 on third down, and it kind of just snowballs, and it just starts to become a rough day. And you kind of see it there towards the end where it's almost like, you know, all right, we need to just get the hell out of here. It's, you know, this is not – This game isn't going our way. And sometimes that's just how it happens. It's not, you know, specifically game plan related or it's the player's fault, whatever. It's just sometimes it just doesn't roll your way. And I know a lot of fans don't want to hear that. It kind of sounds a little bit like an excuse, but it does kind of just fall that way. But like I said, it's just not having that running game to lean on, especially on third and short, is really difficult. You got to be able to convert those and keep the drives moving and keep those long drives that we've seen from the Nittany Lions this whole season.
You know, Landon, obviously there's a, you know, there's a lunatic fringe of the fan base who right now they're just venting. It's, you know, get rid of the coach, get rid of the offensive coordinator. Hey, could Sean Clifford come back for his ninth season here, you know, because we're not happy with this one game. And none of those things are going to happen. But I think for this game, the hope that the Penn State fans had was, okay, in my opinion, Penn State was punching up a weight class with Ohio State for several years. This was the season when it's a fair fight. you know, where there we felt like there was as much talent on the Penn State roster as there was on the Ohio State roster, and that's not really been the case. But we'll get into some of the more of the details, and I do want to ask you about the defense a little bit. We'll hit one of those positive things when we come back.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Landon Tengwall joining us for another segment. And Landon, we were talking between segments about this, and I wanted to ask you about it. Probably the biggest play of the game, and actually a 14-point swing. Curtis Jacobs forces fumble, scoop and scores. All the excitement in the world on the Penn State side. You look back, and there's a flag. Just tell me your response to that play and how the team would react to that.
Yeah, first off, I mean, as fans know, there's no worse feeling than having that big type of turnover where it goes for a touchdown, and then, you know, you look and you see that yellow marker come up on the TV screen, or you see that yellow flag laying there, and it's like, oh, man. And like we talked about, as Penn State fans, you know, most of the time, and that flag is normally not going your way. So it's tough, and, you know, I'm sure for Curtis, too, scooping and scoring and that great feeling in a big game like that on national TV, and then you turn around and see that it's coming off the board. And not only is it coming off the board, but now you got to go get out there and play goal line defense. So it's not a good feeling at all for anybody on the team, especially Curtis. And like you said, a 14-point swing, I mean, that would have completely changed the game. And it just kind of kills the morale going from a huge turnover like that to then giving them first and 10, you know, right near the goal line. It kills a team. It kills a defense, especially up until that, and really the whole day, but up until that point, a defense that was playing stellar that day.
And let's talk about that call a little bit from the standpoint of, you again, you and I were talking off the air about it. This is a play that is away from the ball. I don't think that receiver was a factor. I don't think it was, hey, the quarterback was targeting him, looking at him, and the holding. Technically, yes, it was holding. My issue was it was away from the ball. What did you see on that?
100%. And that's one thing. We have refs every day at practice, and that's what they tell us. They tell us if the ball comes your way or the quarterback's looking your way and you were getting that hold, it's a lot more likely that call is then going to come. But it wasn't even, you know, the sack and the fumble came so quick that it really wasn't affected at all. I thought the same thing. It was definitely a little bit of a tug. But I think easily could have been not called, especially with how the refs were letting the wide receivers and DBs play a little bit. I don't think that needed to be called. Obviously, it was just very unlucky that it happened and we had that type of turnover, especially on third and 11 when you're trying to get that team off the field, which Penn State did a very good job, you know, the whole day, you know, 6 for 16 on third down. The defense did a really great job. Obviously, that fourth down stop at the goal line. So really, really a great day by the defense going against a really good Ohio State offense, who's been really impressive so far. But those are the type of plays you need in this game, something like that, something like a punt block to kind of just get the team going. And so I think that really killed the morale a little bit, because that completely would have just changed the way that this game was going.
I think so too, and that's one of those things as a fan, you see that, and it's really upsetting. Now, let's get back. It's funny. We talk to you about the defense, and all we do is talk about the play call that went against them. But, you know, the rest of the time, the defense was so good, and unfortunately, the offense wasn't. One of the other things that's talked about a lot, Landon, is we hear about the wide receivers not getting separation. How much of an emphasis is that in practice? What did you see? What could the receivers do differently to get that kind of separation?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is really play calling, getting the guys open. So, I mean, if, for example, you look at Ohio State and kind of what they did, obviously we didn't come into this game thinking, oh, forget Marvin Harrison, we're not going to cover him. That's not at all what happened. What happened was Ohio State came in with a great game plan to get Marvin Harrison open and get him targets. You know, obviously you see he was kind of on like a special wheel route on that one play where he had a huge gain. Just finding different ways to get him open. And then obviously that's a guy that just naturally creates separation. So, you know, I from an offense standpoint, it's not, you know, it's not always the player. It might be the play call, but at the same time, sometimes guys just have to, you know, especially in man coverage, just have to kind of get that separation, be able to create that with leverage, you know, what they've seen in film. So to a certain extent, it does become, you know, on the wide receivers, you know, part to be able to get that separation. And, you know, we just, at a certain point, you know, there's certain things you can say, you know, work on, you know, cutting in out of breaks, new releases, whatever it may be for the wide receiver off the line. But at the end of the day, you just got to find a way to get some separation and help your young quarterback out on the road in Ohio State. You know, he needs to be able to have some comfortable, easy throws to make that are wide open instead of having to, you know, put it in an exact pinpoint, you know, spot every single time for his receivers.
The other thing is and this is a lot of fan speculation, sports writer speculation, commentator. Boy, weeks to prepare for Ohio State. We're going to see some special things on offense. We're going to see that trick play or different things. And it seemed like the limit on trick plays is the double pass with Keandre Lambert-Smith. And as a fan watching it on TV, as soon as I see that ball going to Lambert-Smith, all right, double pass. And if I'm saying that, I suspect the Ohio State defenders are also. Did you get the same feeling this is going to that well a couple too many times?
Yeah, I definitely noticed and saw the same thing. As soon as you see it, you knew, and they were clearly ready for it. I mean, they came right down. They didn't try to run back and play defense. They just said, forget it. We're just going to go right at him. Make him either throw it and, you know, create maybe a turnover or just make him take the negative yards that he ended up just taking. And that's, you know, you come into the game hoping that those type of plays are something that are going to jumpstart your team a little bit. And I think that's kind of why we turn to something like that, to try to create a big play for us down the field. You know, obviously you'd like to have those from your basic offensive plays. They just seem not really to be there. And kind of like we talked about again with the lack of run game, I mean, only averaging, you know, I think we're right around 2 yards per carry. That's not going to do too much to stress out that defense and bring those safeties up so you can get over the top. So like you said, I mean, we talked about it last week. Obviously it wasn't too much of a factor because, you know, you're kind of able to have your way with UMass. But as we start to get into this Big Ten play and play other teams like Ohio State, like Michigan, you got to be able to take the top off of defense a little bit and threaten them. So I do expect us to try to put a little bit of an emphasis against Indiana on maybe taking some shots down the field.
And that's been obviously the topic of conversation a lot throughout the season, that they aren't taking those shots. Is it a case, Landon, where just by doing that, you're forcing the defense to respect it and it will open up other things?
100%. And, you know, we kind of you poke fun at Corey for asking that question a couple of weeks ago about just throwing it deep. And I know Coach Franklin was a little bit dumbfounded at that. But there's a lot of coaches that will say that is an idea to just throw it deep just to threaten it. And I really do believe in that you have to be able to stretch that defense and threaten them a little bit, because it's similar with all, you know, from, I think of it as an offensive line standpoint. If a defensive lineman's only threatened me with one move, well, I know to expect that move the whole time. And I'm not really worried about that other move, and that other move being going deep as an offense. If I'm a safety and I'm not that worried about the, you know, a deep post coming across, well, now I can cheat up. And now I might be in there for a little bit of extra run support. I might be in there for that quick slant that's coming across the middle that may not be open now. But if we just went deep on the play before, well, now I'm thinking in my head, okay, let me make sure I get into this back pedal. Let me make sure, you know, I'm covering my deep zone. Well, now you're coming up into the box and now you're helping out. And that's just, you know, that definitely hurts an offense to not be able to stretch it down the field. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've really had too many shots at all down the field. I definitely think that's something that we need to put an emphasis on going into this week.
Now, What's this? Do you feel this was like a strategy by the offensive coaches to be conservative, not needing to go deep? Is this Drew saying, okay, some of the plays are there that he's only supposed to throw if it's open, but he's choosing to check down? Has the offense actually been conservative and not looking to go deep?
You know, obviously there's always routes that are going deep. That's, you know, that's how, you know, you open plays up a little bit. But I do think there might be some hesitancy from Drew about throwing that deep, but maybe when there's not too much separation, when he's not just wide open, about wanting to just let it go. I think part of that, and honestly, I saw this on Twitter and some people will laugh, and I think there's some truth to it, is that he hasn't thrown an interception yet. I think there's a little bit of nerves there about throwing his first pick. And you might call me crazy, but I think it would almost be good for him to get that first interception out of the way so he doesn't have to worry about it. You know, a lot of players, and they'll say, oh, you know, it's not even on my mind. You know, I can guarantee you, you know, from a player's standpoint, he's definitely thinking, all right, well, I'm coming to this game. I still haven't thrown a pick. I'd like to continue that trend. And I think from time to time that can make you go, okay, maybe I'm not going to look, you know, I won't throw this deep post because the safety is a little too close. When normally you might, you know, you kind of want to take those risks, especially against, you know, a team like Ohio State where you can really need some of those big plays. You know, let your wide receiver go up. Let Trey Wallace, like Keandre Lambert-Smith, try to go up and make a play for you. I think that's also something we need to do. We're, like you said, I think we are being a little too conservative and trying to make sure everybody's open instead of letting these playmakers, you know, Coach Franklin, a fantastic recruiter, he goes out and gets all these amazing guys. Let them make some plays. Put it up top. Put it up top for Theo Johnson. He's 6'6". Let him go get it. I definitely think that's something that we could definitely improve upon, is letting our guys, you know, go out and make some plays.
And I imagine, too, along with it, it's like, hey, I don't want to throw that first interception. I suspect that the coaches hammer away, be safe with the ball. You are carrying the program when you're carrying the ball. The possession of the ball is important. Don't turn it over. So I'm sure that's part of it also. Let's finish with this note. And the season is not over for this team. Nothing is off the table. So how does that affect how the team approaches it, how the coaches talk to the team? Is that part of the conversation this week, Landon?
Yeah, 100% is. It's, you know, obviously everybody's going to be a little down, especially this morning, these next couple of days. And the coaches are in there to really just remind them, you know, that this isn't the end all be all. We beat Michigan and we still have a really good shot. And obviously, you know, the coaches aren't really saying that. We're just focusing, you know, on Indiana. That really is how Coach Franklin, you know, he's not looking ahead too much. But the coaches are there reminding the players, this is just one game. You know, we got to get back to work. We got to just focus on what's ahead and just taking this one day at a time. But you got to learn from it. You got to take, you got to eat it. Sometimes it's good for a young quarterback to experience a kind of heartbreaking loss like this. I mean, obviously we saw how emotional Drew was. And like I said, sometimes that's good for him to experience. And, you know, he doesn't ever want to feel that again. And, you know, best believe he's going to put his head down and go to work. And I think that's philosophy coming from from Coach Franklin all the way down. And I know these guys are going to continue to work their butts off. Just get ready for Indiana this week.
All right, that's fantastic, Landon. As always, I appreciate your input and expertise and giving us kind of an inside look of what it's like to be a player on this team. And thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are